You're listening to BBC Radio Scotland. And just a word of warning about the following programme, some of you may find the content disturbing. 92 to 95 FM, 810 medium wave, and on digital radio, BBC Radio Scotland.
Female genital mutilation is carried out here in Scotland.
We can hear screaming, crying. So when we ask what are they doing, they just say nothing.
Thousands of girls are at risk.
I was blindfolded and some people held my hands and other people held my legs.
We've discovered Scotland is becoming a haven for this practice.
Families are coming up from England and Wales into Scotland to have the practice carried out on their girls, and that's certainly concerning.
This is child abuse, yet no one knows the true extent of the problem, and there have been no prosecutions.
How many referrals have Police Scotland had from Health?
None.
I'm Lucy Adams, chief reporter of The Herald, and in this programme we look at how an ancient practice which takes place in Africa and Asia also affects women and children in Scotland. We speak to specialists, midwives and police officers to explore why it happens and why more is not done to stop it. This is a lament by a Senegalese artist about girls being cut around the world.
Growing up, every girl that I knew underwent FGM. It's the normal thing for every girl to do.
Female genital mutilation is commonly referred to as FGM. It takes many forms. Some refer to it as circumcision. But it's not the same as male circumcision. It's not about cutting skin. FGM traditionally involves the removal of the most sensitive part of a woman's body. Fatou Balda lives in Edinburgh. She underwent FGM age 7.
I remember we were told we were going to a party at my uncle's house. I was blindfolded and some people held my hands and other people held my legs, and I remember I was screaming for my mom and my grandmother to help me, but no one did. I wasn't given any medication before or after, no anaesthetic, nothing. And if you want to have a wee, they would put warm water and salt and some herbs, and you have to sit on it. And that I still cannot get out of my head.
Fatou says FGM is celebrated in many parts of the Gambia.
After you've had it, all your aunties and your uncles will give you new outfits. It's like a massive party. So every girl, when you were young, you know you will have that party. But you don't know what happens before the party. It's like a wedding here, you know, thinking, oh, my daughter will be getting married. How excited you get. It's the same. They get excited equally the same. And they put a lot of pressure on women here.
Fatou's story is one of millions of cases from around the world. To give you an idea of the scale, the UN estimates that FGM affects 130 million women in at least 35 different countries. 6,000 girls undergo FGM every day, and it's been practiced for thousands of years. Ali Moto, like Fatou, is another woman who was cut as a child. She's claiming asylum in Scotland, but she fears for the daughter she had to leave behind.
I have a daughter back home still now. I keep thinking about it every day. I hope they don't do the same thing to my daughter. But when I talk to them, I hope you don't take my daughter, you don't circumcise my, they will just say, you are there, we are here. What does that mean? Which means they've already done it, I don't know.
Julia Lala is the head of the Orchid Project, which specialises in FGM.
The best that we know about why female genital cutting started is that there was one pharaoh in Egypt who chose to cut his entire harem of women. He did that to control them. He did it to ensure their fidelity, their chastity, and their virginity. And what happened as a result of that was the highest social strata were cut women. This was a sort of precondition of marriageability. Everyone wants what's best for their daughters.
Everyone wants what's best for their daughter. This is a lot easier to understand than the act of removing a piece of flesh from a child. Ultimately, some mothers agree to cut their daughters precisely because they love them.
For women there, it's not just about being proud of it, but it's like a security. You depend on men to provide for you. So for my mother, I'm sure she was thinking, if my daughter undergoes this, it means she can get a good husband who would look after her in the future, who would provide for her. Because if you don't have FGM, it's like most men don't want to marry you.
But how can anyone really justify female genital mutilation?
A lot of people do justify it culturally, others justify it religiously.
This woman is a development worker at a specialist support agency in Scotland. She cannot be named due to threats from the community about the type of work she is involved in.
Some of the cultural justifications include that a woman's private parts are filthy, they are dirty, they make her have sexual urges. So by eliminating those parts of a woman's body, she's going to stay faithful and she's going to be a good wife and mother. It's barbaric.
The desire to conform is a powerful one. I think we all know women who have changed their appearance to please men or prepare for their wedding day.
What no one has realised until relatively recently is this is a practice held in place by a social norm. You know, why do we get rid of our underarm hair? Men don't have to remove underarm hair. There's no legislation that says we have to do it. And yet we as women know you commit a social sin if you don't do that. The social shame of how you would be treated if you went out in public with hairy armpits is enough to keep us all complicit in doing it.
While Julia recognises that hair removal is definitely not akin to FGM, the example highlights the social pressures placed on women. Some would do anything to ensure FGM continues, but there are people working to end the practice. Khalid Musa campaigned against FGM in Sudan. He refused to stop despite receiving death threats. As a result, FGM was conducted on his daughters while he was away from home. They fled. He says his daughters now suffer nightmares, struggle to eat, and refuse to be touched by women, including their own mother. We're talking to him in Cairo over the internet.
When they came to my wife, they said they are authorized, but actually they cheating my wife and did it as a punishment for my practice and for advocating on this campaign. They said I have signed this paper to circumcise the girls. They come and did it immediately and they are bloody. I took my kids, I brought them in Cairo, they are bloody and even they are not able to walk.
This is the sound of 30 communities giving up cutting in Senegal, where the education work of a charity called Tostan has led to 5,000 communities ending FGM. Molly Melching founded Tostan.
I mean, once you get good information, people change. I mean, people say, how can this be? It's like magic. And when we suddenly started getting scientific and medical information, people started changing. And I think this is what's happening, and that's why I say education, education, education.
In contrast, the cutting is increasing here in Scotland. The question we want to answer is why. Research shows countries such as Senegal and Mali have reduced FGM, yet in Scotland it is rising. During our investigation, we learn of two women in the UK who chose to undergo FGM as adults in order to marry. Dr. Comfort Momo is a leading FGM expert in the UK. She runs a specialist clinic and sees 300 women a year who have been cut.
The case in Scotland is a white woman that, to please her husband, she FGM herself at age 26, and the argument around that is her choice. Although it's informed choice, informed consent, but if you look at the reason for her, is to please her husband. So again, is that true choice?
This is Julia Lala from the Orchid Trust.
Why, as a social norm, is this something which is still happening in diaspora communities within the UK? Well, we know anecdotally that the diaspora communities most often will hold on to their traditions and their social norms and cultures. If you are replanted in a completely different country in a completely different environment, you're actually much more likely to hold dear to you what you took from your old community. You can see how powerful it is that people want to hold on to what they know.
To investigate why FGM is increasing here, we went first to the NHS, because it is their frontline staff who see it firsthand. In speaking to them, we learnt about the health implications.
If you have a piece of flesh removed from your body, you will hemorrhage.
Comfort is a midwife who has seen the ramifications of FGM.
So excessive hemorrhage, tetanus from infection, obviously, using the same razor blade or the same equipment for group of girls, whereby introducing blood-borne diseases like hepatitis. In some areas, you have fractures because the child's struggle. Pregnancy, labor, even coming to have the defibrillation or reversal. And it brings memories and flashbacks for some of these women.
Surprisingly, although health professionals treat women with FGM, we've discovered they don't consistently record that information. UK guidelines state all pregnant women should be asked about FGM. However, new research, seen by the BBC, found that pregnant women in Scotland with FGM were not asked about it. Remember Fatou from the Gambia, who we spoke to earlier? When she came to the UK, she learnt about the health implications of FGM for the very first time. As a result, she started researching the problem.
I spoke to women in Edinburgh and Glasgow who have had children in Scotland within the past 3 years. And I spoke to them about their experience of childbirth. They were hoping that healthcare professionals would ask them if they have undergone FGM and see how they could help them. Unfortunately, all the women that I interviewed were never asked if they had undergone FGM.
Lothian Health Board disputed this finding and Glasgow didn't comment. Both health boards say every pregnant woman is asked.
Every single woman should be asked the question around female circumcision.
Gillian Smith is the head of the Royal College of Midwives in Scotland.
We need to have some data collection so as we can plan the services for the future and so as we can support these women.
So, how common is FGM in Scotland? We've grappled with the lack of national and even local statistics. We submitted Freedom of Information requests to each of the 32 local authorities and 14 health boards. The majority were unable to tell us how many cases they had encountered. And less than a third of the 32 councils has specific local guidelines on FGM, contrary to Scottish Government guidelines from 2010. We wanted to find out why no one has been prosecuted here for FGM and how the numbers have been allowed to increase. Part of the answer seems to lie in the gaps in recording information about FGM. Police Scotland recognises there's a problem. Their own figures show there are almost 3,000 school pupils in Scotland from countries where FGM is prevalent. In Glasgow, they plan to work on awareness raising with teachers to target more than 1,600 children who may be at risk. But we still don't know the true extent of the problem. Jan McLeod of the Women's Support Project is working with the Scottish Refugee Council to create an FGM network to coordinate work here.
So really sitting in a situation where nobody can say for sure how many people are here, how many women who've suffered it, how many girls are at risk in communities that traditionally practice FGM. And until we can get a bit more strength there, we're going to have difficulties in persuading commissioning teams and so on to develop further services.
we found Scotland does not routinely monitor the numbers of women who have undergone FGM, nor the number of children at risk. Yet the Home Office is compiling its second analysis of figures for England and Wales.
We realised that there isn't really proper joined up thinking, for want of a better word, and certainly not joined up services on FGM. We have no full investigations, only a handful of child protection concerns, no prosecutions whatsoever, and no convictions. So you think, well, what is going on here?
We went to the police to see why no one has been prosecuted here. Police Scotland seems determined to tackle the problem head on, but sometimes feels like a lone voice in the official sidelines. They've investigated 6 cases this year, but say they need health professionals to share information with them.
Jill Emery, Detective Chief Superintendent, part of the Specialist Crime Division, and I have a national portfolio for public protection.
Why do you think that health professionals are not sharing that information with the police where cases of FGM have come to light?
It is difficult for health professionals to see the positives of an intervention by the police, but it is a crime in Scotland. The reality is that it is more a case of using the information from health in relation to adult women who have had FGM in order to assess risk to perhaps that unborn baby or other children that they have.
If health professionals are not recording the data and referring cases to the police, it makes it difficult to assess the problem and identify those at risk. New Scottish Government figures, seen by the BBC, show that between 1997 and 2011, 2,403 girls were born in Scotland to a mother from an FGM practicing country. And yet none of these cases were referred to the police. And according to an FOI request we made to all 32 local authorities, less than 10 cases have been referred to social work. Could 10 cases really be the right number?
So I understand Scotland has a specialist midwife who specifically deals with FGM, which indicates that there are a number of women who've gone through this. As a result of that, how many referrals have Police Scotland had from health?
None.
Midwives in Scotland have told us they would always refer serious concerns about child protection, but do not refer every pregnant woman with FGM. The people we spoke to for this programme told us that England and Wales are leagues ahead of Scotland in tackling FGM. But even there, health professionals don't always refer cases to the police. When midwives come across a pregnant woman with FGM,
yes,
if that woman then has a daughter, would that be something that they would then discuss with social work or with the police in terms of concerns about child protection?
This is really creating lots of problems at the moment. In some areas, people will say, oh, well, I will report all cases to social services. The argument is, are they the right people to refer to, or do we refer to health visitors? Health visitors that will provide support to this young child and her family for the next 5 years.
FGM was outlawed in the UK almost 30 years ago, but there have been no convictions here. The Crown Prosecution Service in England claims it is on the verge of a prosecution there. However, France has already had 100 convictions.
I remember where I grew up in Europe. As a routine, every year we used to get a GP and a dentist coming into the school. We would be taken behind a curtain, stripped naked, and everything would be checked. I'm not traumatised by this, so I would argue against anybody who would say that this is against children's rights. And suddenly, you know, child protection and racism no longer work together. They'd rather be not called a racist than protect the child life. Why is that?
The French approach divides opinion. Another barrier to prosecuting FGM is that it tends to be invisible to most people in society.
By its very nature, it is a hidden crime. Clearly, other countries in Europe have a physical examination of children. It's a very invasive intervention. and clearly we would want to avoid doing anything that compounded the trauma that these children will have experienced. So it becomes dependent on identifying those women who have had FGM themselves and are expecting a child and have a female child in Scotland, and it will take time for this to be exposed to the extent that it needs to be in this country.
There is concern that agencies in the UK are tiptoeing around this issue and that more young girls could be abused as a result. Gillian Smith of the Royal College of Midwives says we shouldn't be timid.
I think it's just about this concern around, are we offending people's culture? Well, we shouldn't be offending people's culture, because the fallout from actually having that done can be quite detrimental for the child. It could be that it affect their entire reproductive history.
Kirsty Thompson is a human rights lawyer in Glasgow who specialises in female asylum seekers.
It's a very important piece of legislation. It's the government saying, we're making it clear we are not tolerating this, but it's not enough.
The question remains, does the problem lie with the law on FGM or in our attitudes and approach?
I do think it's unhelpful to just look at this through the lens of one piece of legislation and a piece of legislation that criminalises it. My fear would be that that keeps it hidden, because women are scared. They don't want their family members, regardless of what's happened to the community, to be penalised. By looking at it as a human rights issue, the government has obligations to ensure that if it is happening, it doesn't. And it has obligations to ensure that we take steps to prevent it, to raise awareness, to increase training, guidelines, and also to ensure effective protection. It's one thing for me to say this person can't go back to Nigeria, because although there's a law criminalising it, it doesn't work in practice. So we need to ensure that the same thing doesn't happen here.
Census figures show that the number of people in Scotland from some FGM practicing countries have doubled in the past decade.
People from FGM practicing communities, when they come to Scotland, they bring these beliefs, these practices, which is why we're seeing an increase on the number of women who have undergone FGM living in Scotland, also whose children are at risk of the practice.
While researching this programme, we found that not only does FGM happen here, in Scotland, but that Scotland is in danger of becoming an FGM epicentre because it's seen as a soft touch. Anila Anwar from the charity Roshni works directly with the communities affected.
Families are coming up from England and Wales into Scotland to have the practice carried out on their girls, and that's certainly concerning if Scotland is now being viewed as a place that doesn't take the issue of female genital mutilation seriously. There will be cutters who are within Scotland, who live within communities, who will carry out the practice. So we've heard of people travelling to Birmingham, and even families coming up from Birmingham, Manchester, London, and we've also heard of a couple of stories of people coming from France to the UK, Scotland in particular, to have the practice carried out.
Fatou says cutting in Scotland is also driven by cost.
Because it's getting expensive to take a daughter back home and circumcise or mutilate them. What women are doing is they would put together money and bring over someone who can cut the girls, which is cheaper, and, you know, if it's here, they can protect it and stuff.
Em is a specialist support worker based in Scotland. We can't name her because she is working undercover here in the communities that practice FGM. We're using an actor's voice. How many women in Scotland do you believe have undergone female genital mutilation?
A lot. Number in thousands, I'd say. And those are the ones who underwent FGM, and the ones at risk, we don't know, we're still counting, because if their mother is in the community and she has undergone FGM, the chances are that she doesn't know that it's against the law or the health implications, so she'll do it to her child.
The message we hear again and again is that there is some excellent work in Scotland to tackle FGM, but that it is patchy. The Scottish Government provided us with a statement from Equalities Minister Shona Robison.
Anyone aware of FGM taking place has a legal and moral duty to report it. The police have assured us that they investigate all reported incidents and there is strong legislation in place to prosecute in cases of FGM. Anyone aiding or carrying out FGM, either here or abroad, faces up to 14 years imprisonment. Between 2012 and 2015, £34.5 million has been allocated to tackle violence against women, including FGM. Monitoring a sensitive issue like FGM is difficult, but the government will continue to tackle this abuse of human rights.
OK, I'm hoping that we'll end up being pretty interactive and...
This is the first meeting of Police Scotland and a new consultancy group made up entirely of women working in this area. The aim is to understand more about this hidden crime and the communities that practice it.
There's a huge positive message in intervening and preventing this taking place, and I think we would all prefer that we were able to avert this crime rather than investigate it and deal with it in terms of a prosecution. What we really want to do is stop this happening at all to any child and to any woman.
This is the ultimate taboo. You can't talk about genitals. When you add violence into that mix, when you add violence done by parents to their own daughter, you add layers and layers of complexity. And yet at the heart of this is a very simple thing. People wanted to protect their daughters. You can still love your daughters and be good parents by not cutting your daughters. That is where there is hope and opportunity in this debate.
Specialists have told us that Scotland was not universally prepared for FGM and that the lack of community integration in some areas means that it remains hidden. There have been no referrals to the Procurator Fiscal, no prosecutions and no convictions. And until agencies share information, it remains a secret, invisible practice that few are willing to discuss. But we've discovered that it is an increasing problem in Scotland. Thousands of women with FGM are living here, now. Thousands of girls are at risk. The first step is to raise awareness. For those who would prefer to ignore it because it involves difficult words and cultural sensitivities, listen to Comfort Momo.
It's seen as a cultural issue. It's seen as, oh, it's got nothing to do with us. That's their culture, that's their tradition. Well, let's allow them to do it. I think we need to encourage people to talk about it. We need to sing FGM. We need to mobilise and encourage everybody.